Welcome to Paul or Nothing, the place to get all of your Paul all of the time. Join me, your host Sam Wiles, as we discover the history, the music, and the man behind it all, Paul McCartney. To get in contact with the show, email us at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com.
Just anybody.
Help!
You know I need someone.
Help!
When I was younger, so much younger than today,
I never needed
anybody's help in any way.
But now
these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured.
Now I find
I've changed my mind and opened up the doors.
Hello, hello, hello. And welcome to another episode of Paul or Nothing, the place to get all your Paul all of the time, as well as pay-as-you-go Paul, 4G Macca, and Fibre Optic McCartney. Once again, thank you all for downloading the show, those of you who keep coming back to hear my insane ramblings. I cannot display my gratitude enough. You are all the lifeblood of the show, as I've said before, and please keep supporting, please keep downloading. Thank you for your constant support. Let's get the housekeeping out of the way early this time, folks. Follow us on our Patreon on the link below. Check out the blog, which is www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. You can check out all of our latest articles there. Follow us on Twitter, which is @McCartneyPod. Find us on YouTube and Facebook, which is just simply by typing in Paul or Nothing or Paul McCartney Podcast. Leave us an iTunes review, please. They really do give us the exposure we need. And please send us in any emails, whether you want to talk about the show, whether you want to talk about your Paul McCartney story, your first experiences with him, or maybe just maybe you want to say how nice the show is. Maybe we shall see. Email us at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. That's paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. I told you I'll be breezy this time, folks. And I'm glad we got that out of the way. We're back online. Yes, we are back with our latest episode of one of our three side series for this podcast. This being the one where I get to relax and talk about something other than Paul McCartney albums for 5 minutes by instead talking about Paul McCartney films instead. So where are we? Where are we? Well, we covered A Hard Day's Night on our last episode, where I was getting rather hoity-toity in my analysis, very film student-y. But hey, these episodes are more about indulging myself in film criticism than entertaining you lovely people. Thank you for all the support, again, as always. And then before that, we obviously covered the divisively naff concert film Rock Show. I'd love to hear your opinions on that as well. And we started off with Rock Show purely just because I wanted to start a Paul McCartney film review segment, but we are kind of more or less keeping it in line with the more rigid chronological format that we've done with the rest of the podcast. Obviously, we get to go a little bit before the breakup of the Beatles. We are covering Beatles films right now. And we get to move on to the next chapter now of this McCartney filmography, which is, of course, the smash follow-up to A Hard Day's Night, simply titled Help! And yes, I will be forever calling it Help! As you do have to shout as such, as it does have an exclamation point. So if that is going to annoy you, I'll just say thanks for the download and you're free to leave now. But before we dive in, I think we need to lay the foundations of how I came about this film. Because one of the things that makes this show unique is that I'm taking on, you know, old Macca's entire discography, despite not being familiar with well over 80% of it. So I think that excuses me somewhat for not being able to be fully familiar with albums like Memory Almost Full or Off the Ground. But that being said, there is no excuse for the transgression that I've come to admit in front of the congregation today. I think it's safe to say that 20 plus episodes into this podcast that I'm an absolutely massive Beatles fan. I own every Beatles record on vinyl and digitally. I've seen 4 Beatles tribute bands, I've been to the Cavern half a dozen times, I've done the tours, the museums, the exhibits, watched the documentaries, bought the books, the t-shirts, the mugs, the works, everything. I've been there, I've done that. But despite this, you know, don't fuck with me level of fandom with the Beatles, I had never made any substantial effort to watch Help ever. Yeah, not too sure how this happened really, especially when you consider the fact that I love the album and I love being a completist, I love being a collector. Well, okay, I kind of do know how it happened, and it's simply because of what I'd heard and what I'd read from online articles, people I knew, friends, family, and that was more or less that Help was a bit naff. You know, something about stealing jewels, exotic villains, silly cults, and the Beatles aren't quite themselves, and all that just sounded a little bit too much of a departure of what I was used to and what I'd kind of grown comfortable with my Beatles image at that point, and it felt like it was going to be a little bit too chitty chitty bang bang for my liking. But look, I've seen it now, and here's what I thought. Help, for what it's worth, is incredibly fun. Now, I know what some of you are panicking, as my first adjective was not something like great or brilliant or fantastic or phenomenal, because it really isn't any of those things. It's not as groundbreaking as A Hard Day's Night or Yellow Submarine. It doesn't have the emotion of something like Let It Be, and it doesn't have the off-the-wall weirdness of the Magical Mystery Tour. What it is a charming, innocent, and most importantly, fun little Beatles romp. And the important thing that I noticed about 20 minutes into my first screening is that it really isn't trying to be groundbreaking or genre-defining. Help is the Beatles essentially trying to subversively dick around on the studio's dollar, smoke weed, have fun, and possibly have a movie at the end of it all to show for it. And there is a movie at the end of all of it, if you're interested. If you can call it a movie, that is, because it really isn't a movie in the conventional sense. No matter what part of the production you focus on, you get the same kind of feeling. Inconsistent acting, a plot that kind of flirts between meandering and zooming skittishly scattershot, wobbly production design, inappropriately competent yet restrictive, passionless camera work, no real beginning, a whole lot of nothing in terms of a middle, and if you can call that an ending, then the Justice League was fucking Citizen Kane. But I'm not here to bash this movie, folks. No, I'm not. I enjoyed it. I really did. It was really, really fun. It was a great experience. I can enjoy things on this podcast, but I do need to reinforce that I cannot review this movie like I did A Hard Day's Night. It's not that kind of film student, epochal, defining classic. This is the difficult second album. It's not going to be as good as the last. So despite how many times I'm going to refer to A Hard Day's Night, it's not A Hard Day's Night. I watched Help with my lovely Amy one Sunday afternoon quite recently after we borrowed the special edition DVD from her dad, who's possibly an even bigger Beatles fan than I, which makes for some brilliant conversation whenever we visit, actually. We'll go into his Beatle room. It's very much like Ned Flanders in The Simpsons. And Amy had seen this film several times over the course of her childhood, so she's got a bit of a certain nostalgic bias that I didn't have going into this film. But that helped kind of put me in the best possible mood for accepting the weirdness that was to come with Open Arms. That is, Help! This time, the plot concerns itself with a much more plotty affair, whereby, and brace yourself for this, folks, a non-specific Asian cult is about to make a non-specific ritual sacrifice as part of their non-specific religious ceremony. But they stop just before the climactic moment of death, as they realise they have lost the sacred ring that allows the ritual to take place in the first place. And in one of the best jump cuts in cinematic history, the head of the cult screams, "Well, who has the ring, then?" And bam, flash, we cut straight to a close-up of Ringo's hand, sporting said ring to the perfect sound cue of the beginning of Help, the title song. This is an overwhelmingly powerful move on the part of the film, and has stuck with me ever since I've seen it. It wastes no time giving us, the audience, exactly what we came to see, and it is in this pure, enjoyable indulgence that means any Beatle fan of any age, any level of experience can enjoy it. It displays the same vigour and pop pep that made the first film as exciting as it is and was, and makes you feel confident about the experience ahead. I must say, and rather as a shock to myself, the transition where the movie wanted me to be in, that kind of like spiritual mental space, was pretty smooth and seamless, really. And after it cut to this iconic song, I was instantly won over and completely along for the ride wherever it was about to go. However, it has to be said that I may have been too easily lulled into a false sense of security with Lennon's sweet rock tones, as I was rather excited now to see a decent Beatles plotty comedy. So what exactly happens throughout the course of this flick? Well, if you're expecting twists, turns and developments to happen within the constrained 90-minute runtime minus songs, then you're about to be sorely disappointed. The majority of scenes follow a strikingly familiar format whereby they evoke a series of Monty Python sketches rather than individual scenes that lead on from one to the other. As with any sketch, there'll be a setup, an obstacle and a payoff, usually revolving in some way around the inept campy cult trying to get the ring off Ringo's finger and then comically failing. Maybe the importance of this ring is some kind of allusion to their failed Lord of the Rings project, but I don't really think that there is much in this film that is that deep, to be honest. I know you can easily make any argument that the two great Beatles narratives, aka A Hard Day's Night and Yellow Submarine, both indeed have paper-thin narratives of their own that only exist to similarly string a series of songs together. But as I said, the artifice is just a little more tactile and present this time around, and the inner cynic in me, the viewer, is forced to come to terms very early on with the fact that this is not as good as the first film. Not only is it not as good as the first film, but it is noticeably not as good as the first film. And for all the charms and good, well-intentioned vibes that this film puts out, it's just not enough to save it from its own annoying inferiority. Now, I know what they were going for. They knew that they were not going to be able to do what I want them to have done, which was simply to have made A Hard Day's Night Part 2. They knew they couldn't make it, so they decided to go a completely different route, and I can only commend them for their efforts. Really, it's refreshing to see a different idea being done. But it doesn't fully pay off in the end, and I'm left with a slightly empty feeling and sense of melancholy at the thought of what could have been. That being said, right from the get-go, the film makes no attempt to present this world as being the one that the last movie existed in, and it shies away from being any sort of direct sequel or Beatles cinematic universe. It lays out in plain view as to how this whole thing's going to play out, what the tone's going to be like, and most importantly, how this is going to be different than A Hard Day's Night. And as I've already hinted, boy oh boy, is this a different beast. First of all, you have the obvious cosmetic differences, most striking of which is the fact that this movie has a budget, and a budget that can not only incorporate several location changes, elaborate costume changes, sets, props, but also the advent of Technicolor film print, which means that we get to see the Fab Four in colour for the very first time on the big screen. Now, just because the film isn't one of those cinema verite, a day in the life affairs, does not mean that it has the same strict script discipline of a John Hughes or Edgar Wright film. No. Despite the fact that we do have some semblance of a plot, it is little more than a bare-bones, easy-to-grasp setup to hang an increasingly ridiculous set of set pieces and quasi-music videos around. Which essentially is what the last movie was, but that film was a unique bolt from a clear blue sky, and as I've said before, the artifice is a little more clear this time around. However, this doesn't mean that it's still not one hell of a fun ride. Once again, the biggest draw and most consistently charming part of the whole film is, and always will be, the Beatles themselves, who still have the same energetic wit, charm and all-around likability that makes them what they are. I mean, you can put these guys in literally anything and they'll be able to coast off this charm alone, although this notion will be pushed to its very limits with the Magical Mystery Tour, but more on that in the future. Another major difference with this flick is the characterisation of the Fab Four themselves, and whilst they are charming and fun and as enjoyable as ever, there's something slightly off. Now, I'm sorry if I'm comparing this film to A Hard Day's Night a little too much, but it's really impossible not to. And unlike in A Hard Day's Night, the Beatles as we see them here are not accurate facsimiles of themselves. Not that they ever really were in A Hard Day's Night, but you could tell that they were kind of going for supercharged, heightened versions of the real deal. Whereas with Help, we have some sort of alternative reality where we have four lads who look like the Beatles, play the Beatles music, and are in a band called the Beatles, but they're not quite our Beatles. There are no screaming hordes of fans, but everyone seems to know who they are. They are kind of more or less blended in together as a unit, with less distinctions between the four of them, which hampers their performances somewhat, but also makes them less like caricatures. But it was these caricatures that I was actually quite fond of originally. I liked the smarmy Lennon, cutesy Paul, quiet George and silly Ringo. It gave us something a little bit more to chew on, whereas here it's kind of just four charming, witty young lads. And the result of this is the Beatles coming as more of a set package, which makes a rather Hydra-like performance where none of them really shine, but none of them are really bad either. But you can see why they did this. This works for the plot, as the Beatles really aren't the driving characters in this narrative. More they're just quirky, watchable vessels who constantly have things happen to them and around them, which obviously led to the Beatles commenting that they felt like extras in their own film, which I completely sympathise with. And that normally doesn't make great cinema, normally, but here it kind of works out as there's this aura of charming farce to the whole project where you can just tell that they were really throwing the whole thing together and there really wasn't as much thought as a modern Beatles film would be. You can just tell that the Beatles in their post-marijuana exposure period of their careers are clearly just trying to have a good time amidst this obligatory cash-grab Beatles flick. And this carefree chaos that the Fab Four purvey throughout the picture is another one of those enjoyable, subversive treats that the film has to offer. You literally cannot take your eyes off them for a moment for fear that you'll miss some minuscule detail in their performance. And trust me, there are plenty of them. Again, like I did on the last review, without going into any painstaking spoilers, you will really need to go over this film scene by scene with a fine-tooth comb. And if you do, you will be rewarded with all manner of hilarious sight gags, strange imagery, and what-the-fuck moments. The ending is something that really has to be addressed,
and weak endings would be something that would plague Beatles films right the way up to Let It Be before they did some image course correction and came up with the spectacular rooftop concert. Here, we essentially just have a film that doesn't come to its natural conclusion. Instead, it kind of just stops and winds down, and then you're like, oh, okay, I guess the movie's over now. And yes, you can try and mask that all you want by playing the title song Help again all you want, but you can't ignore the fact that in addition to nothing happening, what little that was set up in the first place is never resolved, meaning that the whole thing is essentially a huge fucking waste of time from start to finish if you didn't find it funny or if you didn't like the music. Luckily, the whole thing is hilarious and I love the music, but when I was watching it for the first time, I couldn't help but have a smarmy university thinking cap on, and it came across either as a big fuck you to the audience type of ending, or they just ran out of money ideas, or both. And the film clearly didn't have a script supervisor to make sure that this was more of a cinematic experience that actually paid off. The ending is literally just a bunch of twats dicking about on the beach. Okay, don't worry, that's literally the worst thing I have to say about this film. Honestly, I really do like this one. I really do. I look forward to watching it again in the future. And I don't want to come across like I'm shitting all over a film that I have genuine affection for. But remaining as non-biased as possible does have its downsides from time to time. And this is an honest critical review show. This isn't just me wanking off Paul McCartney. I am just going to say when he's involved in something that I'm not particularly approving of. What I do like about the film is that, like its predecessor, it's utter chaos in the best possible way. I can't get enough of shambolic roller coasters like this because you are genuinely never sure what is about to happen. This means the film, unlike many murder mysteries and thrillers, there is a genuine certain sense of spontaneity and surprise, and you are taken aback by some moments. Not like in a shocking way. There's not like a grisly murder reveal or anything, but just when the band do something completely off kilter and off the wall, like, oh, okay, I guess we're here now. Cool. And you could just tell that during the production, any idea from anyone may have been taken for consideration and whipped up on the spot. Now, the reasons for this disorganisational energy were severalfold, but the two key elements that I think stand out is firstly the fact that the Beatles had to memorise about 16 pages worth of scenes every day for 10 days in preparation for this film, and that the production budget was so low and tight, despite the fact that, you know, it was a bloated budget compared to A Hard Day's Night, that director Dick Lester had to edit the film simultaneously as it was being shot. This leaves us with a bunch of scenes that, whilst working perfectly fine within their own kind of inner continuity, come across as seemingly disjointed from one another, with a cast who really don't know what they're doing, in a movie going nowhere fast. And yet somehow, despite all of this, I was thoroughly entertained from start to finish, and I laughed a damn sight more than I was expecting to, which is always a warm feeling. Though, I do wonder a lot if this is linked to something I call Avatar Syndrome, whereby something feels fresh the first time but barely holds up on multiple viewings, so I'll be sure to get back to you once I've given this film another go. Also, please drop us an email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com if you think this film holds up to multiple viewings or not. Musically, this film works rather like its predecessor, as both of them exclusively use songs from Side 1 of their Mother soundtrack, but not quite a soundtrack album, and once again this format is rather infuriating as it means some of the best songs are left off the final film, and the fact that the most iconic song of McCartney's career, Yesterday, is not in the film is just such a waste, really. However, this is mostly due to the fact that Paul had his infamous scrambled eggs eureka moment dream during the production of this film, so it was never going to happen. And apparently Paul drove director Dick Lester absolutely mad to the point of distraction by playing and humming the melody over and over again until he got it right. Other songs left out of the film include Lennon's brilliant It's Only Love, Harrison's quirky little You Like Me Too Much, and the Titanic Macca track I've Just Seen a Face, played the way it was meant to be played before he balls it up on Wings Over America. The songs themselves appear within the narrative very much like any other Beatles film, whereby the film will take a quick break from whatever was going on, magically conjure up some instruments into the Beatles' hand, or, you know, find some convoluted way for them to be playing songs within the scene. The most common excuse in this film is that the boys are actually recording a new album during the events of the film, which is a fun enough idea, but it seems like a bit of a needless shoehorn when you remember the fact that these four lads are not the Beatles as we know them, and it kind of feels slightly out of place if you think too much. But despite that, it is just really cool to see Beatles playing these types of songs in these settings, especially when we know that during this period in the early 60s, there really isn't much footage of them playing in the studio at all. The songs themselves from Side One are another one of the film's saving aces up the sleeve, as it is quite simply one of the most sublime collections of harmless pop tunes ever assembled, and I'd argue that the quality of songs that appear in both A Hard Day's Night and Help are at least on par, maybe even with a slight lead with Help at a push. I mean, you've got Help, The Night Before, You've Got to Hide Your Love Away, I Need You, Another Girl, You're Going to Lose That Girl, and of course Ticket to Ride. Like any other Beatles film, their music has this incredibly powerful effect on the whole package and just objectively makes it better. Come on, people, it's Beatles music. You know how good this stuff is. You're listening to this podcast. What more can I say? It's the best, and especially in 1964, this would have been worth the price of admission alone. The songs are also shot very well. They have a nice variety of locations and atmospheres, the most notable of which is the classic Ticket to Ride sequence where the Beatles go skiing, and the imagery combined with the editing, the shot choice, and that wonderful song all just come together to make something truly transcendent, and it's the standout memorable sequence from the film for me. Some of these images that are interspliced with this kind of quasi-music video ethos still permeates through the pop culture zeitgeist to this day, and it's hard not to see what all the fuss was about. If I was a mid-60s teenager, I would have eaten this shit up daily and nightly. Another major musical moment during the production of this film was Macca meeting the actress Eleanor Bron, who plays the elusive double agent within the cult. And he apparently, this is one of the many stories, he apparently named Eleanor Rigby after this woman, though this is one of the 50 million versions of the Eleanor Rigby origin story, so who knows? Actually, I think we brought up this exact topic during my interview with Paul DeNoyer, so go and check out that if you haven't already. I should also, however, briefly touch on one of the biggest tectonic shifts in the Beatles' lives that had occurred in between the filming of their first and second features, and that was, of course, what else? The introduction of marijuana into their lives. Yes, it's that time of the show again where I get to indulge my inner vice and talk about weed. Yes, meeting with Bob Dylan in a hotel room a few months prior, the Fab Four became the Dab Four, smoking to their heart's content. This had a huge impact on their sound, as can be heard on Help, but even more noticeably on Rubber Soul. So it makes sense that it would have an impact on the way that they'd make a film as well. This intake of Bubba Kush, Purple Haze, California Cherry Cheddar Cheese in the boys' lives had now manifested itself in two ways that we can both see and feel on screen, and possibly smell. The first of which is just in the overall tone and atmosphere. These guys are out-and-out stoners now, so everything was going to be cool, man. There is no real peril in this film, or danger, or negative feelings of any kind to be had. This is a relaxed, peaceful atmosphere, one where ideas are encouraged and we're all just here to have a good time. And this is one of the many elements that gives the film its charm. The second is in the Beatles' performances themselves. They're not quite as, say, sharp as they were in the first film. They're a little bit slurry, and we know for a fact that they were struggling to remember lines because they were so stoned. But that does also mean that they have a certain unpredictability, a certain zaniness, and a certain carefree attitude that may not have existed on the first film. But this may also be because they are more comfortable being the Beatles now. This is their second film. So maybe they feel like they can just relax and smoke weed and let everyone else work around them. Again, this Pineapple Express mindset only adds to the chaos of the film, as you've got these four absolutely zonked out stars that are meant to be carrying this film, but unfortunately are not mentally present to do so, so they've got to build a film around it. Again, it just adds to the utter unbelievability that this thing got made and is as good as it is. So yeah, Help, whether or not it's a standout piece of cinema, it's still an iconic and important film in the history of pop culture. So it has worth in that alone. Honestly, if you are in search of a fun, carefree, light-hearted, farcical romp, then I'm sure you will enjoy this one. If you're a fan of the Beatles, and you most probably are if you're listening to this podcast, then you will absolutely love this film, and I can't believe you haven't seen it already. Yes, I know that I myself have only just gotten around to seeing it, but I am through the looking glass now and all the gladder because of it. This film is full of enthusiasm, fun, energy, and all manner of positive buzzwords. I mean, the fact alone that a millennial hipster, contrarian such as myself, who went into this with the worst possible expectations, then, you know, came out on the other end with an ear-to-ear grin, that alone should be enough to get you to watch it, or even better, re-watch it, as I'm equally interested to see how this film holds up over time. But yeah, what's my arbitrary review? Well,
yeah, I'll probably give it 3.5 stars, or to be more specific, 7 out of 10, or to be even more specific, 74% out of 100%. So yeah, that is what I think. But let me know what you thought of this film, more importantly, or any Paul McCartney film for that matter, especially ones that we have not yet covered on the show. I'd love to read out some of your reviews, some of your film reviews out there in the future. If you've got some opinions, please drop us an opinion at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, folks. I hope you are all enjoying these little film reviews that I'm up to. I know I'm not focusing too much on Paul and his acting per se in these episodes, but you know, the Fab Four is more just one being at this point. But you know, don't expect the same type of analysis as we move forward into the future. Paul is going to become more and more permanent, and that is, as always, more fun. Thank you, folks. Follow us on Twitter at McCartneyPod. Find us on YouTube and Facebook by simply typing in Paul or Nothing or Paul McCartney Podcast. Leave us an iTunes review. And of course, check out the brand new Patreon page. Links can be found below. I'm sure Denny Lane is already rocking in the background. Stay tuned for a whole host of bonus episodes as we're working up our way to Back to the Egg and McCartney 2. They're both just around the corner, actually, folks. I've actually already recorded McCartney 2 with Tom already, so that one's already in the can. But yeah, people, keep on rocking. Peace and love. Peace and love. Peace and love.